Thank you. Thank you, Michael, and thank you, Brian, for that introduction, which managed not to embarrass me too much about my embarrassing background in all kinds of things. And I'm very happy to have landed here in public health among all of you and to have the opportunity to talk a little bit about LGBT health as a tool for social justice. I did major in astrophysics, but I have difficulties with technology, so I'm going to press a button now to advance the PowerPoint. If anything explodes, just duck.
Do I press this?
Sure.
Yes!
So, my first question for all of you here is, how do you feel today? Feel great? Feeling good? Everybody's happy to be here in Denver. Feeling a little weird about the altitude, maybe. Okay. I'm a little sick. Caught one of those nasty viruses that's going around in the fall. How we feel today is obviously the result of a lot of complex factors. Where we're from, where we're living, where we happen to be traveling, whether or not we used antiseptic wipes after we touched that nasty handle in the metro, whether or not we go to a school of public health and health services where we're surrounded by people who are in public health and should know better and should self-quarantine, as a professor said to me once. I congratulate you for executing a self-quarantine. I was like, great, that paper will be in next week then. But the other thing that we know about how we feel today is that it's really only impacted to a relatively small degree by those things that are immediately under control. Quick time and a decompressor, I needed to see this picture. This was going to be a great picture. It's not going to come up, is it? It is a pie graph, pie chart, and it shows approximately what percentage of our health status at any given moment is due to four overarching factors. The first of them, biology and genetics. Second of them, the health care that we're able to get. Third, the environment that we're in. And fourth, social determinants. Social determinants of health that talk about what kind of access we have to the things that we need to keep ourselves healthy, to the things that we need to keep our families healthy, to the ways that we can structure the forces of power, the forces of money, the forces of employment, the forces of education, all of these things that enable us, those of us lucky folks to be here in this room today, and that keep many, many, many more people out. We generally tend to call this health disparities. This little slide here shows the infant mortality rate. This is in the United States. Look at the differences there. This is something that most of us are familiar with, right? We've heard of health disparities. This is a problem. We all know this. Okay. But what does it actually mean in terms of the everyday picture of health, wellness, well-being for people in this very, very rich country of ours today? This is in America in 2005. Look at the differences between infant mortality rate between these different groups on the basis of race or ethnicity. I was at a meeting recently in Oakland where someone mentioned somebody from there who was talking to all of us who are not from there and don't have the opportunity to know the community that well, was reminding us all that a black child born in the flatlands will live on average 15 years less than a white child born in the hills. That's in today's America. And what does that mean for all of us who are struggling with the social determinants of health that are based on sexual orientation, that are based on gender identity, that are based on gender and gender expression, all of the ways in which we live out our lives versus the ways that many, many people think we should be living out our lives? When Congress was putting together health care reform, Senator Kennedy wrote the president a letter reminding him, what we face is above all a moral issue. At stake are not just the details of policy, but fundamental principles of social justice and the character of our country. That graph on the previous page was just a graph, but it shows the stories that too often don't get heard, and stories that really should be being heard, particularly in rooms like this, rooms that are focused on public health, rooms that are focused on social justice, rooms that are full of people like yourselves that are working to ensure that, as it says here, all young people, regardless of sexual orientation or identity, I would add gender expression or identity, race, ethnicity, class, age, whatever, deserve a safe and supportive environment in which to achieve their full potential. These are some of those stats. The old saying goes, numbers numb, jargon jars, and nobody ever marched on Washington because of a pie chart. Except for that pie chart that you didn't get to see. That was life-changing. You all would have been stampeding out of this room, if only. Another moment, another opportunity missed. These are just some of the top-line stats that a cursory look at some of the materials that the National Coalition, where I work, has put out over the last year or so. Approximately 30% of LGBT youth report having been physically abused by family members because of their sexual orientation or gender identity or expression. How do these things cut across race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, where you're from, whether you're living in a big city, whether you're living out in a rural area, whether you're living in a, you know, pretty safe and sedate place like I grew up, Southern California, the white suburbs? We don't really know. And actually, all of these numbers are really, to a large degree, the best that we've been able to do with really, really limited tools, as I'm sure most of you out there, or all of you out there, start screaming as soon as the phrase data collection comes up, right? Who are we? What are our problems? What do we need? We know this. We know LGBT people smoke at rates significantly higher than the general population. Why is that? Well, part of it is stress. Part of it is, where are we funneled when we're young people and we're looking for the people that we need to make a community? We go to the bars. Gay and bisexual men and transgender women, particularly people of color, are disproportionately impacted by HIV and AIDS. We were lucky. We considered ourselves lucky to get a line or two in the national HIV AIDS strategy, despite the overwhelming impact of HIV and AIDS on our communities. Black and Latino lesbian and bisexual women are much more likely to be overweight than their heterosexual peers. Why is that? We don't necessarily know. How much more likely? We don't really know. What can be done about it? Our communities are beginning to work on ways, or have been working, actually in many places, have been working for a long time to figure out what we can do about this. But when it comes to actually communicating that to the people who are in a position to direct money, to direct attention, to direct all of those resources to bring to bear on that question of health disparities, where is LGBT? One of the big frames that the National Coalition tries to use in its approach to bringing LGBT issues to the table, we're often the LGBT voice in the health rooms, and except for all of you lovely folks here, of course, and the health voice in LGBT spaces, because too often people don't see how marriage, don't ask, don't tell, all of these questions of what is the position of LGBT people in this country, how that impacts health, and how we can actually use health as a bridge to talk about a lot of these intersectional identities, to talk about how we're not just LGBT, we're not just people of color, we're not just uninsured people, we are sometimes all three. We are sometimes none of these things. For me, as a transgender man, I know some things about what structures my vulnerability. I know some things about what my strengths are. But when it comes to building a movement that is taking the individual pieces of each of our identities and moving them forward to become part of a broader movement, a broader agenda for LGBT health and social justice, we still have a long way to go. One of those frames that I think, or I hope, will be useful and that will become more prominent as we move forward with initiatives like healthcare reform, which I'm going to talk about briefly in a minute, and which Rebecca will touch on a little bit later, is health equity. Moving from disparity to equity. Our communities have been left behind. We all know that. But what does it mean to catch up? What does it mean to say, to hell with this rat race, to hell with this track? We're going on this track because we know what our communities need to be healthy. We know how to get there. And health equity is one of those frames that can bring together different communities who often don't recognize what they have in common and start having conversations about what is it going to take to get us where we need to be. Some of those that the National Coalition works particularly hard on, and I'm sure these are familiar to many of you out there, data collection There are currently no national surveys that allow LGBT people of color to accurately represent both their race and ethnicity and their sexual orientation and gender identity. Discrimination. We all know what it's like, but do we really know what it's going to take to bring institutions into a place where they're not just talking about, oh, let's tack on the LGBT, or let's tack on the racial and ethnic communities, or let's tack on cultural competency, but to actually start thinking about what it's going to take to get us access to the spaces we need to be in. Similarly for invisibility or legal status, people who are immigrants, LGBT people who are immigrants, transgender women are dying regularly in detention facilities because they have come here for asylum and they have found nothing but detention, where they cannot get their hormones. If they have HIV or AIDS, they cannot get the medications that they need. As a transgender person, again, the documents that I have, do they faithfully represent who I am? My birth certificate says F. How many of you think it would be nice to see me in a dress? It's not pretty. I always say transgender man because otherwise people think I might be going, you know, in the other direction, and they start measuring me for a dress and like, oh, electrolysis is gonna hurt. And similarly, emerging identities. It wasn't so long ago that on the census they asked, what are you, black or white? We can only hope that as we move forward with the discussion of intersecting and overlapping identities, that we really seize the opportunity to define for ourselves what these emerging identities are and to start recognizing the ways in which they can be a place of power. Some of the health tools for social justice that Rebecca is going to touch on in some more significant detail, but I just wanted to give a quick overview of some of these tools that have come up over the last little bit that are starting to have that conversation about transforming from disparities to equity, that are starting to recognize emerging identities, starting to recognize the ways in which we cannot be siloed. We cannot just be LGBT. We cannot just be women. We cannot just be African Americans. We are all intersecting and all overlapping. And as we move forward in terms of some of these federal policy initiatives and some of these community-based advocacy strategies, I think that that's the conversation that we need to be having. And I look forward to having that with all of you. And I encourage you all to ask questions, not of me, but of Rebecca Fox. No, I'm just kidding. About such tools as Healthy People 2020, which this year, or this decade, for the first time ever, will have an entire topic area dedicated to LGBT health. Healthcare reform, which the joke going around is that, what did it have to be, the gay ACA for you people to care? Right? We're in there, but we need to be reading between the lines because the people in power are not going to help us. And I don't mean that to say anything against any government folks who are in the room, but these are larger structures of power that are not going to help us read between the lines, and that's something that we need to be doing. What is the Affordable Care Act, and what does it mean for our communities? I can help you with that. National Coalition. Hey, look me up. The National Prevention and Public Health Strategy, which there was just a listening session on earlier today. I encourage you all to check it out. Vulnerable and disparity populations, data collection advocacy, some of those research agenda and Institute of Medicine reports. I'm sure many people are familiar with the upcoming report on LGBT health research gaps and opportunities. And the Partnership for Family Inclusion, which is something that the National Coalition started a couple of years ago in conjunction with some of its partners to begin talking, or to continue talking, about how all of these issues overlap and how we, as LGBT health and social justice advocates, can move forward for making real change for our communities. Thank you.